ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो नाइन्थ चैप्टर द पासिंग अवे ऑफ भीष्मदेव टेक्स्ट 11। पांडुपुत्रान उपाशीनान प्रश्रया प्रेमा संगतान अभ्याचष्टानुरागाश्रयैर अभ्याचष्टानुरागाश्चैर अन्धीभूतेन चक्षुषा। पाण्डुपुत्रानुपासीनान् प्रश्रय प्रेम संगतान अभ्याचष्टानुरागाश्चैर अभ्याचष्टानुरागाश्रयैर अन्धिभूतेन चक्षुषा। पांडुपुत्रानुपासीनान् प्रश्रय प्रेम संगतान् अभ्याचष्टानुरागाश्रयैर अन्धिभूतेन चक्षुषा। पांडुपुत्रानुपासीनान् प्रश्रय प्रेम संगतान् अभ्याचष्टानुरागाश्रयैर अन्धीभूतेन चक्षुषा। पांडु, द लेट फादर ऑफ महाराज युधिष्ठिर एंड हिज ब्रदर्स। Putran, the sons of Upashinan, sitting silently nearby. Prashraya, being overtaken. Prema, in feelings of love. Sangatan, having gathered. Abhachashta, congratulated. Anuraga, feelingly. Ashray, by tears of ecstasy. Andhibhutena, overwhelmed. This Srila Prabhupada. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feelings. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. Please repeat after me. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feelings. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. When Maharaj Pandu died, his sons were all small children. and naturally they were brought up under the affection of elderly members of the royal family, specifically by Bhishma Dev. Later on, when the Pandavas were grown up, they were cheated by cunning Duryodhan and company. And Bhishma Dev, although he knew that the Pandavas were innocent and were unnecessarily put into trouble, could not take the side of the Pandavas for political reasons. At the last stage of his life, when Bhishma Dev saw his most exalted grandsons, headed by Maharaj Yudhishthir, sitting very gently at his side, the great warrior grandfather could not check his loving tears, which were automatically flowing from his eyes. He remembered the great tribulations suffered by his most pious grandsons. Certainly he was the most satisfied man because of Yudhishthir's being enthroned in place of Duryodhan, and thus he began to congratulate them. Panduputran upasinan prashraya prema sangatan abha chashta nuragashrair andhi bhutena chakshusha. The sons of Maharaj Pandu were sitting silently nearby, overtaken with affection for their dying grandfather. Seeing this, Bhishma Dev congratulated them with feelings. There were tears of ecstasy in his eyes, for he was overwhelmed by love and affection. So, after the battle of Kurukshetra, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows. Bhishma Dev had the benediction. Bhishma Dev received a benediction from his father that he would die only when he would want to die. He had the boon of Ichhamrittu, which meant actually Bhishma Dev became immortal. He would die only when he would want to die. So, in the battle of Kurukshetra, Bhishma Dev sided with Duryodhan. As Prabhupada pointed out in the purport, for political reasons. It was a moral consideration for Bhishma Dev. Bhishma Dev considered that he was maintained by the king, Duryodhan. So it is a moral obligation that whoever is maintained must side with that person. So Duryodhan became the king, and Bhishma Dev, although he knew that the Pandavas were unethically, illegally put into this tribulations, they were cheated of their kingdom. By birth, Yudhishthir Maharaj was actually the king, because the Vedic custom is that the eldest son in the family inherits the assets of the family. Especially in the royal family, whoever is the eldest becomes the king. Now, Dhritarashtra was elder, but Dhritarashtra couldn't become the king among two brothers, Dhritarashtra and Pandu. Dhritarashtra was elder, but he couldn't become a king because a blind man cannot become king. So Vedic culture follows a very systematic method the principles are in are very strictly designed, and the followers of Vedic culture follow that principle. There are these considerations. In a royal family, the firstborn male child becomes the successor to the throne. We see that in the West also, it is kind of followed in a certain way. The firstborn, in England, Elizabeth became the queen because she was the firstborn. But in Vedic culture, a woman cannot become a king or queen. A woman cannot ascend the throne. The woman doesn't inherit the throne. This is also very systematically designed, because the understanding is that the woman doesn't belong to the family. A daughter born in the family does not actually belong to the family. Daughter is considered to be the property of the husband. Therefore, she doesn't inherit the father's inheritance. Father is a custodian. The father of a girl is a custodian of the daughter. And she is the property of the husband. Therefore, when the girl grows up, the father offers the daughter to the husband. So we can see how scientific the Vedic culture used to be. And not only that the firstborn male child will become the king, but if the male child is blind, then he cannot become a king. The understanding is clear. How can a blind man rule? He can't see. So he doesn't know what is what. A ruler must give protection, and ruler must establish law and order. But a person who cannot see, how can he fight? How can he defend? How can he give protection? And how can he establish law and order? Therefore, the blind man cannot become a king. So Dhritarashtra, because of his blindness, could not become a king. So the real successor to the throne was Pandu. But Pandu also, after a certain time, had to retire, because Pandu was cursed. That if he ever has any relationship with a woman, then he would die. So although he was married to princesses, Kunti and Madri, one was the princess of the daughter of King Kunti Bhoj, and the other was the prince of Madhura Raj. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Ki Jai, Jai Shri Shri Gornitai Ki Jai. The other girl was, other was the princess of Madras. But Pandu was cursed, that if he ever unites with his wife, then he would die. Therefore Pandu retired, because and he accepted the life of an ascetic. He went up in the Badrik Ashram, high up in the Himalayan mountain, and he started to live like a hermit. And the fear was that the consideration was that if one is leading a very luxurious life, full of comfort and indulgence, then he will naturally be provoked to indulge in sex life. Therefore, he retired. And there, Pandu could not procreate children in the womb of his wife, but Kunti had the benediction from Durvasa Muni that she could call any demigod and beget children from them. So when Pandu got to know about that, Pandu requested Kunti to call some demigods. Now again, you can see that how wonderfully Vedic culture was designed, that although it is for a woman, it is unchaste to have a sexual relationship with anyone else, but out of necessity, it could be allowed. Like one was procreation through Devarena Sutatpatti. Procreation through brother-in-law. When the husband was absent, husband died, then the widowed wife, in order to maintain the family line, could be impregnated by the Devara, brother-in-law. And also the demigods, they, if one has a relationship, if a woman had a relationship with a demigod, that was not unethical. So this is how very, very systematically, scientifically the Vedic society and the Vedic way of life was designed. So Pandu considered, who was situated in knowledge, that to beget children from a demigod would not be unethical. So Kunti was requested to first get Dharmaraj, Jamraj, to get a child. Then Pavan Dev to get a child. And then Pandu performed a great austerity for 1 year to request Indradev to come and get a child through him. And Arjun was born. So out of these three demigods, three sons were born. Yudhishthir Maharaj through Dharmaraj, Bhim through Pavan Dev, the lord of wind, the demigod controlling wind, and Arjun from the king of demigods, Indra. And then Madri received two sons from the twin demigods, Ashwini Kumars, Nakul and Shahadev. Now they were brought up in the hermitage when they were little children. They were spending their time, but then when unfortunately Pandu died, then the sages brought these five children to Hastinapur. And at the time there was a confusion, or there was a doubt whether they were Pandu's children, because everybody knew that Pandu could not have sexual relationship with his wife, with his wives. But at that time Vasudev came and he explained, and then only they accepted it. Here we can see Dhritarashtra's nature. Dhritarashtra has, the name itself signifies his character, his nature. Dhritarashtra. Dhrita means holding on to, and Rashtra means kingdom. Although he is unqualified, he is trying to hold on to the kingdom. So Dhritarashtra could not become a king himself, but he had some deep-rooted desire that his son would become the king. At least his son would become the king. But unfortunately, Yudhishthir Maharaj was born before Kunti could, before Yudhishthir Dhritarashtra's wife Gandhari could give birth. And so this is the arrangement, the divine arrangement of destiny. Therefore, an intelligent person situated in knowledge, he just accepts everything as Krishna's divine arrangement. He doesn't go out of his way to make any special arrangement. He just accepts whatever comes on his way. Of course, that doesn't mean that he does not make any endeavor. Yes, he makes endeavor to establish the will of the Lord. But he doesn't go out of his way to establish himself as such. The brahmanas are naturally withdrawn. They do not care about materialistic affairs. But the kshatriyas do. And a genuine kshatriya, he, considering himself as a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he acts on behalf of the Lord, not for his own sake. Therefore, we see the Pandavas, because they were devotees of the Lord, they accepted everything as Krishna's divine arrangement. They had gone through a lot of trials and tribulations from their early age. But they always accepted everything as Krishna's divine arrangement. Like when they were little boys, Duryodhan, he was so vile and vicious that he poisoned Bhima. Bhima was Bhima was extremely powerful. And although Duryodhan, the Kauravas, were 100 brothers, but Bhima alone was more than all 100 of them. He used to beat them up. And they could not, they were no match for Bhima. So Duryodhan became very envious. So he wanted to get rid of him. And one day when they were playing on the bank of the river, Duryodhan arranged, he made some laddus, he made some sweets with kalkut, with the poison, the most deadly poison. The poison of the cobras, the poison of king cobras. Very deadly poison. So he mixed kalkut poison with the sweets and made sweets out of them. And Bhima was very fond of eating. So he fed a lot of this laddus to Bhima in a solitary place. And then Bhima lost consciousness. So when Bhima became unconscious, they tied him by his hands and feet and threw him in the river. So Bhishma's body sank at the bottom, drowned and sank at the bottom of the river. Bhima's body actually came to the Patala Loka, the region where the snakes dwell, snakes reside. And Bhima's body fell on the snakes. The snakes became very angry on whom the body fell. So they started to bite Bhima. Now the snake bite, the poison of the snakes from their bites acted as an antidote to the poison that was given to Bhima by Duryodhan. So Bhima woke up, he regained his consciousness, and he felt very angry that the snakes were biting him. So he started to kill the snakes indiscriminately. So the news reached the king of the snakes, Vasuki. And so Vasuki became curious, so he came out to see this human child who is killing the, so powerful that he's killing the snakes like that. So he came and he saw Bhima. And he recognized Bhima as his great-great-grandson. So he became very excited. and he took Bhima to his palace. And there he made Bhima drink nectar. And just by drinking nectar, Bhima gained the power of 10,000 mad elephants. He got the strength of 10,000 mad elephants. Now we can see, this is how Krishna acts. The miscreants, the unscrupulous people, try to harm the devotees. But by Krishna's arrangement, devotees become more powerful. Although they try to harm devotees, they even try to kill the devotees, but eventually their plans fail and devotees derive an inconceivable benefit from their conspiracy. Like here we can see that Duryodhana wanted to kill Bhima, but Bhima, who was already so powerful, became extremely powerful. No one was a match to Bhima. So, in this way, they had gone through various difficulties from their early age. But all the difficulties actually became benedictions. So Krishna makes his devotees go through different experiences or go through different situations, but the ultimate objective is to glorify the devotees. Apparently or materially, from a material perspective, Duryodhana was enjoying and the Pandavas were in exile, undergoing so many different difficulties. But if we look at Duryodhana, then we can see, although he is living in a palace, although he has everything, but he is so unhappy. He is so unhappy because his heart is constantly burning with envy. He couldn't sleep at night. What kind of a life? Can't sleep at night, he can't digest his food. Because he is always burning with envy and anxiety. How to hold on to his kingdom? How to secure his position as a king? And how to get rid of the Pandavas? He saw the Pandavas as his worst adversaries, worst enemies. But Pandavas did not consider Duryodhana to be their enemy. Pandavas didn't consider Duryodhana and his brother to be their enemies. They always considered them as their cousins. Even when they sent them to exile, when they were in the forest, once they came to harm the Pandavas with their army. Duryodhana, along with his army, came to harm the Pandavas. But at that time, a Gandharva king was sporting in that forest, and he felt disturbed because because Duryodhana came along with his army, and Duryodhana was so puffed up, he challenged the Gandharva king to a battle. And in that battle, Duryodhana lost with his army. And he was captivated. Jai Shri Shri Radha Madan Mohan Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. They captured him, tied him up, took him as a prisoner. Now the news reached the Pandavas. They were in the forest. Although Duryodhana along with his army came to harm them, but when Yudhishthira Maharaj got to know, he suggested that, no, let's go and rescue them. Bhima was very happy. So that it's good that these guys got the right punishment. But Yudhishthira Maharaj told Bhima, no, you can't act like that. You can't think that way. He said that after all, they are our brothers, they are cousins. So if they are in distress, then we must go and help them out. And at that time, Yudhishthira Maharaj made a very wonderful statement. He said that when there is a struggle between us, then yes, they are 100 and we are 5. But when some outside people are coming and attacking us, then we are 105. He was so noble, so broad-minded. Although the Pandavas have made them suffer so much, made him go into the forest, not only lose their kingdom, but they were exiled. But the noble character of Yudhishthira Maharaj was always forgiving. So in this way, we can see that Pandavas, although they may have gone through difficulties, but they are not affected by those difficulties. Like we see, wherever they went, they were having a wonderful time. They went to the forest, they were having the association of saintly people. Actually, the situation where one is not so important. What is important is the association. If one doesn't have the right association, he may live in a palace, but he'll feel uncomfortable. But if one is in the right association, even if he's in the middle of the forest, he'll be ecstatic. Sometimes, don't we go out and picnic? People go out and picnic. They go to the forest, right, to have picnic. Now, do they suffer when they go to the forest? No. They enjoy. Why do they enjoy? Because of the association. All friends together, they're cooking in the middle of the forest, collecting logs from the dry branches, to light the fire and cook there. And apparently it's quite austere, but they enjoy that situation because of the association. Therefore, it's important to recognize the fact that our real happiness doesn't lie in our external situation as such. The comfortable situation is not the consideration. The consideration is with what kind of people we are. If we are the right kind of people, we'll enjoy. If we are the wrong kind of people, no matter wherever we are, we'll suffer. So, apparently Pandavas had gone through lots of difficulties, and Bhishma Dev at that time, he was recalling all the difficulties that the Pandavas had gone through. And he was feeling really sad that, oh, such pious people, they suffered so much. In the later verses it will be explained, he's lamenting, why Yudhishthira Maharaj, who is the son of Dharma himself, Bhima, who is the son of Pavandev and so powerful, no one could ever match him with his mess in hand. Arjun is the greatest archer, greatest warrior. That they should actually be in the most glorious personalities on the planet. With their own ability, they could have established themselves in the most exalted position. And they did that. Duryodhan conspired that, okay, fine, they want some kingdom. There was a negotiation, and the consideration was give when they found out Pandavas were still alive. Duryodhan tried to kill the Pandavas along with their mother, Kunti Devi, in a house made of shellacks, Jyotugriha. He wanted to burn them alive. But by the help of Vidura, they escaped. They managed to escape. But everyone thought that the Pandavas along with Kunti were dead. But then during Draupadi Swayambara, Arjun, who was in disguise of a Brahmana, won Draupadi, performing the most amazing feat of archery. That no one, actually Draupadi's father, made that arrangement that there would be a fish high up on a, the fish would be hanging way up on in the space, and below that there would be a rotating wheel, and that wheel had one hole in it, just one. In that wheel, it was solid wheel, but there was one hole, just one opening in that wheel, in one side. Like wheel is moving like this, so the hole is also moving, rotating. And the condition was that looking not up but down on a plate of water, looking at the reflection, one had to pierce the eye of that fish. And if one could do that, he could get Draupadi. Drupad made that arrangement because he knew that only Arjun could perform such a feat. Yes, another person could do that was Karna. But when Karna came, Draupadi refused to allow Karna to, because she said, I do not know what's his background. He's not a Kshatriya. So I can't accept him. So he was not even allowed to try. And then when all the Kshatriyas failed, then Dhrishtadyumna, Draupadi's brother, declared that now that no Kshatriya actually was able to perform this condition, fulfill that condition, if any Brahmana can, if a Brahmana wants, he can try this. Because if a girl did not get a suitable match in her own caste, it is accepted that one, she can accept a husband from a higher caste. A girl from a lower caste can get married to a higher caste. But a girl from higher caste cannot get married to a lower caste, boy from a lower caste. So this is another scientific consideration of the Vedic arrangement. Because the understanding is that a woman from a higher caste is to be seen as the mother by the members of the lower caste. Therefore, a woman from a higher caste couldn't get married to a man from a lower caste. And that would be somewhat like getting married to one's mother. But a man from a higher caste could get married to a girl from a lower caste. So that's why this arrangement was declared. This was condition was made that if any Brahmana would like to give it a try, then he could. So, Bhima provoked Arjun. Hey Arjun, go. So finally when Arjun stood up, then all the brahmanas became very alarmed. They said that this person must have gone mad. When all the kshatriyas failed, this brahmana, how can he ever fit this, achieve this feat of archery? And they started shouting, sit down, you have gone mad seeing the beauty of this princess. You sit down, don't bring any disgrace to the brahmana community. But other brahmanas started to encourage Arjuna. He said, go, go. Who says that the brahmanas are incapable of what the kshatriyas cannot do? The brahmanas are superior. The brahmanas can do anything. Don't you remember Parasuram? 21 times he wiped out the kshatriyas from the surface of the earth. He was a brahmana. So why should he feel ashamed? Go! And then Arjun went and he hit the target. But Duryodhan and his followers, they started to shout. The fish was so high up, who knows that the target has been hit. Then Arjun took another bow, another arrow, and he hit the fish, and the fish fell. And everybody could see that yes, the eye of the fish had been hit by the arrow. And then others the kshatriyas, mainly Duryodhan's demoniac followers, they started to shout that this is a disgrace to the kshatriyas. Attack, attack. Whoever dares to take an animal from the mouth of a lion. So, they attacked. So then Bhima came to side with Arjuna. And just two of them took care of all the kings, Kshatriya kings with their army. So this is the power of Bhima and Arjuna. So then they recognize that this must be Arjuna. Bhishma told others, Dronacharya and others, that this must be Arjuna. Because otherwise who can ever achieve such a feat of archery? And Drupad also considered. Drupad actually made that condition because he always wanted Draupadi to get married to Arjuna. And although everyone felt that Arjuna, Pandavas died with Kunti in the house of Shalak, but Drupad had a strong feeling that no, Arjuna is still alive. And that's why he made that condition. When that boy performed this feat, he felt that this must be Arjuna. So he sent his spies to find out who these people are, who these brahmanas are. And they took Draupadi to where they are living. They are living in a village called Ekachakra. And there they found out that actually these are the Pandavas, and Pandavas are not dead, they are still alive. And then the Pandavas were brought back to Hastinapur. And then the consideration was now what to do with these Pandavas. Duryodhan has already have occupied the kingdom. Now what to do? So then it was considered that part of the kingdom should be given to the Pandavas. Now what part of the kingdom was given? The worst part, the barren land. The desert was given to them. But The greatness of a personality is lies in wherever he goes, auspiciousness and opulence become automatically manifest there. So although they went, they got a piece of desert, a barren land, but because of the presence of the Pandavas, that became the most flourishing part of the kingdom. And their kingdom, the capital, Indraprastha, was such an amazing place that Duryodhan became extremely envious just by seeing the place. And Duryodhan actually became very upset also because Draupadi laughed at him. The place was as such that if this place, the palace, was actually made by Vishakarma, and no, it was not made by Vishakarma, it was made by who was the engineer of the demons? Mayadanav. It was built by Mayadanav. And it was made in such a way that an impious person, a sinful person, would see the land as water and water as land. Because of his crooked vision, he would not see things in a proper way. So Duryodhan, when he came to the palace, he saw the water as the land and land as water. So when he was in the land, he lifted his dhoti to walk through that. and when he came to water, he just slipped and soaked in water. So this was an indication who is pious and who is impious. And at that time Draupadi laughed. Another thing that insulted Duryodhan very much was that he was addressed by Draupadi as the son of a blind man. So Duryodhan wanted to take revenge. And he made the arrangement of a deceptive game of dice played by Shakuni, between Shakuni and Yudhishthir Maharaj. And in that game, Yudhishthir Maharaj lost everything. He lost his kingdom, he lost his everything. He lost his brothers, and he finally staked Draupadi. And he lost Draupadi. And that's the time Duryodhan instructed Dushasan to bring Draupadi into the assembly and instructed him to strip her naked in the assembly in front of everyone. And at that time, as everybody knows, her husbands, although they were the greatest warriors, they couldn't come to her rescue because they were sold out. Because they lost their independence. A servant cannot stand up against his master. Duryodhan was a master. So although their wife was being disgraced in a public assembly, they couldn't do anything because they were bound by moral codes. Draupadi was appealing to everyone. Draupadi appealed to the elder members of the Kuru family. They couldn't do anything because one cannot stand up against the will of the king. Draupadi appealed to her husbands. They couldn't do anything. So finally Draupadi just took shelter of Krishna. And then Krishna came to her rescue. So in this way, we find that Pandavas had gone through so many trials and tribulations, so many difficulties. But ultimately they were glorified because they were devotees of Krishna, and Krishna always protects his devotees. That is a wonderful lesson that we learn. The most important lesson that we learn is that if we take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will give us all protection. And no matter how powerful, how strong our enemies may be, but devotees, if we become devotees of Krishna, our victory will be guaranteed. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdharaha, Tatra Shri Vijaya Bhuti Dhritirmati Matir Mamaha. So, wherever Krishna and his devotees like Arjuna, wherever Krishna and his devotees will always become victorious. Because Krishna is with them, because they are with Krishna, they are siding with Krishna. So Krishna will win. And not only Krishna will win, there will be Shri, there will be opulence. Wherever there is devotees, there will be opulence. Shri, Vijaya, victory, Bhuti, inconceivable power. So, and Dhriti, and so these are the assurances that when one serves Krishna, all auspiciousness, all beauty, all opulence, all power, and eventually all victory will be there. We see in ISKCON we face so many difficulties. So many difficulties. But ultimately what happens? The devotees win. Why devotees win? Because Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dhanurdhara. So in this way, actually, it reminds me, recently we are facing, just got the news yesterday, and it was a very disturbing news. In Moscow, government, our temple actually was in a government rented place, a place that was rented from the government. So at one point the government wanted to destroy that building and build some big, either a condominium or a departmental store or something like that. It's in the city of the Moscow. And in order to get the devotees move out of the place, the government gave a place which was quite nice, very important, very nice location. And devotees were planning to build a temple there. But then the Russian Orthodox Church became very upset with that, that devotees are getting such a place there. And they are very powerful in Russia. The church is even more, it is said that the church is even more powerful than the government. And so a lot of objections and oppositions were there, and the mayor who actually agreed to give the land, and he changed his mind, and then different departments were also causing difficulties, like the planning department was not giving this permission. And now, yesterday we got the news that the government has taken the land, decided to not to give the land to ISKCON. So it's a very bad, it's very sad news. Anyway, I was responding to that, and my point actually was, difficulties will be there, but one thing we must remember, that ultimately we'll win. No matter how powerful the enemy is, if we are serving Krishna, if our intention is to spread Krishna consciousness, victory will undoubtedly be ours. So we should not become afraid of these difficulties. Rather, we should become resolute in our conviction and launch our defense. And probably this is Krishna's arrangement to inspire us to preach and take up the cause and fight. The consideration was to take the matter to court. Ambarish Prabhu wrote that taking it to the court will not be a good idea because all the cards are in their hands, because the Russian court will be dictated by the Russian government. To fight the case against the government will be difficult. And he was very intelligent suggestion he gave is that we take it to the human rights, UN, United Nations Human Rights Council, and that is our rights for performing our religion is being hindered. So, and also we can make demonstration against in front of the Russian embassies everywhere. And in Russia also we have such an incredible support. So it's going to be a tough time for the Russian governments. Like we can remember, like communist government fell in Russia because of Krishna consciousness. Now it's another challenge. Although the communist government has gone, but another demoniac government has come in place. They may not be communist, but their attitude is demoniac. Previously it was the communists who were our enemy in Russia. Now it's the Russian Orthodox Church is our enemy in Russia. So we have to fight the battle. In London also we had a similar kind of difficulty. They wanted to close down the Bhaktivedanta Manor. The local council decided that we can't have a temple there. And there was a big fight. And what was the result of the fight? The result of the fight was that all the Hindus, or even the Muslims and Sikhs, became united in that cause, in a fight against the British government. And not only, eventually we won the battle, but as a result of the battle, from 18 acres of land, we got more than 100 acres of land now. So, yes, there was a battle, but ultimately the result of the battle was Krishna consciousness became more firmly established in London. So I am confident that something, Krishna has some such plan for Russia also. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada, Gaur Premanande, Hare Hare. Any question?
The live examples that you have explained give more conviction. So my question is, how can we recognize how devotees even today are being protected by Krishna in spite of so many reverses? It happens all the time with all the devotees, many sincere devotees. But how do we recognize how Krishna is acting, Krishna's hand is acting in their life?
Okay, I'll ask the devotees here. How many of you remember that? How many of you have experienced that Krishna protected you from some great danger, great calamity? So you're also raising your hand. Okay, you tell me. Okay, how Krishna protected you?
Krishna protected me from many things. First of all, from actually, initially, before coming to Krishna consciousness, I saw two books in a library. One is both are on Krishna. One is Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Srila Prabhupada, and the other is on Krishna by Osho. I was thinking which one to take. So before that, I had contact with ISKCON, so I was praying to Krishna. So somehow I felt that I should take the Krishna book. I took. So that is one thing, you know, Krishna saved, and like that, so many things.
Krishna did so much for me. One time I was visiting to Nandagram with Canadian devotees in Vrindavan and few devotees of Vrindavan. So the car is got an accident. So six devotees dead there, and all the devotees are unconsciousness. Only I am is chanting inside the car. Then when I come back to temple, then Gopal Krishna Maharaj and Vedabhashram must tell that Krishna accept you, your service. That say you are nothing happened to you. It's a great thing in my life. Hare Krishna.
Yes. So, do you have any doubt? And the most important consideration is that Krishna will not always protect our bodies. Krishna will eventually protect our soul. What is more important? Body or the soul? Sometimes we may have to lose our body, but if we take shelter of Krishna, Krishna will protect us, the soul. He'll make our soul make spiritual advancement. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Gaur Premanande Hari Hari Bol.